And now it's time for Living Writers.
Allen Ginsberg here, announcing that this is Station WCBN FM Ann Arbor, your Dharmic free speech station.
Public school!
Do your homework, pledge the flag, drag 10-pound bricks in your book bag. Don't say gay, but you can call it, get the F slur. Now you know the facts on sex and gender. We're not stupid, we're no fools. We know classrooms are really tools. Take our sharp edges and make them dull.
Go fight public school!
Sit alone at lunch with some tasteless gruel to prepare for life on a lone bar stool. You know kids can be so cruel.
Go fight public school. Go fight public school. Go fight public school. Go fight public school.
Woo! Good afternoon. If you're just tuning in, I'm so glad you did. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and that was just Scott Beale singing the fight song.
The public school fight song.
The public school fight song.
Public school poetry.
Public school poetry fight song. And what we have happening today in the studio, I'm so happy to say, is we've got a group of poets who have created an online journal, Public School Poetry, that we're going to talk about today, because issue number 3 is out in the world, launched September 2024. So we're hot on its tracks here. And so in the room with us, we just heard Scott Beale. We have Julie Babcock. We have Ellen Stone. We have David Ward. And later on in the program, we'll have Megan Levad joining us via phone, who is the Minnesota West Coast correspondent for public school poetry. And as I said, these are poets, one and all, sitting around the table here. This is an exciting moment. Thanks for being here today, everyone. And how did you decide that this fight song was going to be the one? Because did the song predate the journal, or did you write it for public school poetry?
We were in Julie's and David's backyard one summer day when we were kicking around the idea for this journal.
Was David making pizza?
No. I think they were serving us cocktails out of a keg that was left over from their wedding, if I'm remembering right. Yeah. These delicious, old fashions that from, you know. We were talking about, we talked through the idea for the journal. We were kicking around ideas about a lot of things that we'll talk about, I'm sure, through the course of this conversation. And
but you felt like you wanted it to be there to be a journal in the world, like an online journal.
Yeah, yeah. And that idea started well before I was involved. Like, Julie and David were part of the original crew that were kicking around that idea. But the fight song, I think it started as a cheer. We thought we needed a cheer, a public school poetry cheer. And I kind of penned part of a cheer that day, and then I went home and I wrote a song and I sent it to them, and they were like, "I guess now we have a fight song." So.
with even more enthusiasm than that, it was, "Yes, we have a fight song now." It was
yes. Yeah. There was some can crushing and pumping of fists. Yeah. Well, then let's take us back. Julie and David, take us to the top. Like, what's the origin story? Like, where did the original seed start to, germinate for this idea?
Many years ago, we used to get together at my house and read a book of poetry once a month and talk about it. And and then we just started realizing that we were all from public schools, which was really interesting, because sometimes when you get to the academy, you're like, oh, were these all elite private school people, and I'm the only one that's from public school. And it's like, oh, all of us are. And just how much that affected the ways we think about things and the ways that people can participate. And yeah, and then pulling Ellen and Scott into this, and Meg was in on those conversations too before she moved. So yeah, pulling Ellen and Scott in, and it was, yeah, it just felt really right to figure out a way to create a journal. We didn't want to create a journal that was like a lot of other journals. We wanted to have a really distinct identity. And the thing that we were really interested in is how we can democratize the kind of experience of poetry and who can talk about poetry and who can get talked about. So those were like big goals we had. It's not that we love public school.
As you can tell from the fight song, there's some conflicting feelings about it.
There absolutely. Are conflicting feelings.
There's realities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So just holding on to all of that and letting those conflicting feelings come out, and also having kind of points of access that are available to everybody.
I do think we love public school, though. I
mean, absolutely.
Well, Ellen, also, because tell us a little bit about your, where are you coming from as a poet?
Well, I am a community poet. I'm from community high school, is where I taught for over 20 years. And
woo!
Yeah, I was so lucky to teach there. And I had written poetry since college, but then I got a teaching job, and then I had three kids, and I wasn't really a part of the poetry scene in Ann Arbor other than wistfully going to lots of readings and going to Bear River Writers Conference. But at community, I was lucky to be a part of the English department there as a co-teacher. And I started a poetry club with another teacher, another English teacher. And that's how I kind of entered into it. And then it actually made me write my own poems more and get them published and eventually got a book. So I really come at it from a public school perspective. Public school is what got me into the world as a published poet.
I love that. I love that. And is that how you and Scott met? Was it through that with Neutral Zone too, Scott?
It was actually the Bear River Writer Conference.
It was
like
the
first time we met was we were supposed to carpool together there with this friend.
Could you say a couple words about Bear River?
Because
Keith Taylor has been on here, and now. Does Cody Walker do Bear River?
Cody Walker is the director of the Bear River Writers
Conference. And he's got a poem in this and essay in this issue,
Four poems, yeah. Three or four poems and an essay in the latest issue. Yeah, Cody's great. The Bear River Writers Conference has been around for, I don't know, 20, 25 years now or something. It was started by Richard Tillinghast and
James McCullough.
In northern Michigan, it's moved places a couple times. It's now at Camp Michigania and
fancy.
And yeah, so it's kind of like an off season.
I've not been.
It's like like they either use us to kind of warm up the space before the real campers show up, or to kind of wind it down after the season is over. But so like it's like 100 people get in, and there are 10
great
workshops, and so it's a really popular conference. Like a lot of years they would like fill up within 7 minutes or so of like registration opening. So you'd have to be like online to make sure you got your spot at like 9 a.m. on a random Monday morning in February. But
it's hard for poets. Hard.
It's just like a long weekend where you take part in a workshop. You have time to write by the, on the shores of Lake Walloon, which is a really beautiful setting. And and it's been for some of us like Ellen, I've also spent a bunch of my adulthood feeling kind of like outside of poetry community at times, you know, like a little isolated from like poetry community ever since, you know, because when you get an MFA or something, you're surrounded by poetry community all the time at a rate that's really intense and kind of inescapable, and then you are glad to be rid of it for a while, and then you realize that you don't have community anymore and you have to find it again. And so the Bear River Writers Conference is one way that we've been able to kind of build and stay in touch with poetry community And I've met a lot of people that I'm close friends with now that are kind of my poetry brothers and sisters, including Ellen and some others we could name. And yeah, so that, and I think that's part of the genesis of this whole group coming together too, is those kinds of connections kind of cascading together.
I just want to say it's not a fancy conference, even though the dining room is fancy, it's nice, but there was a porcupine in the tree when I was escorting a student back to her room. And that's what I think of when I think of the Bear River Writers Conference. I think of,
God, I didn't even know they could climb.
Are you saying porcupines aren't fancy?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Wow. Maybe you're thinking hedgehog. Yeah. Are you thinking hedgehogs are pretty fancy? But to get back to community, because I feel like that's what you're doing with public school poetry, right? Is building an online community. Because we're on issue number 3. Where are some of the contributors coming from? Is it because the first issue you all had told to me in the past, you wrote to poets you knew who you thought might be up for the project? And maybe actually, David, would you mind saying a little bit about the concept of public school poetry, like what's being asked?
How is it
it's different than other online journals?
And I think if there's anything that I'm really proud of with this journal, it's the fact that it's, I think, really genuinely adding a new kind of texture to the type of interaction poets can have with each other. I feel like typically there's like 3 ways poets can interact. They can be reading at an event, they can be in a writing workshop exchanging work, or they are in a classroom or something like that, or exchanging with a friend. But this type of exchange where it's anonymous and where it's...
could you walk us through that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So the basic gist is that we have a cohort of poets who submit work, and we then anonymously exchange their work with each other. And our poets have agreed to write a 5-paragraph essay about each other's work. And, that I think is a point of great delight for just about everybody, because everyone knows the 5-paragraph essay and has a strange relationship to it.
Could you say more about that? Because everybody kind of laughed and snickered a little bit about the 5-paragraph essay.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of us are teaching in English classes or have been. And so we know that exists as a kind of like default form. And so on our submissions page, we suggest that folks treat that the way that a poet might treat a sonnet or something, where we have these really rigid boundaries that then can be warped and played with.
And made weird and wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Make it weird. Yeah, sure. And they do. Yeah.
And it's completely anonymous too.
Yeah. We take the names off and we actually randomize it. I put the names into random.org and then we get the list back and then use that as the way that we are connecting poets to each other.
And so how people can, so walking through the process, people can submit poems when you have open reading sessions, which is happening right now,
right now.
So if people go ahead online to Public School Poetry.
You have almost exactly 1 month. It closes on December 1st.
And then you all will choose maybe about 15 poets?
10.
Okay.
It's a small group. Yeah.
Well, because you're also asking for a number of poems from each poet, so right?
Is that, right.
And so then you'll choose the 10. Like as editors, you choose the 10 poems, and then this is when you send out invitations. Because when people sign on, I love on the website how it says if you want to become part of this project, you enroll. And so that's how you actually submit your poems.
Right. The enrollment form.
Yeah. We want to make sure that people know that like part of the process is their willingness to write an essay for somebody else and to have their own work commented on. And that's a really, I think, exciting but also vulnerable position to be in for any writer, to have their work being commented on and to be... I think the pressure actually comes from having to sit down and write an essay for somebody else. Like that's a that's a big ask, and we want to make sure that our poets know that that's part of the process.
And is it also what you found, is that, I wonder if it's kind of surprising for you all, because when you started this up, you know, for issue 1, you had this idea, like this is how we can create a new kind of conversation across poets, regardless of, I don't know, anything that comes before, like standing or publication history or whatever it is, right? So what was it like to read some of those first essays?
So fun.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, they're phenomenal, and they surprised us, and I, there is so much cleverness and invention in the ways that people have taken this, the kind of denigrated form of the five paragraph essay, and made it their own, you know. It's been really beautiful, and we have these. With each issue, we've also had like a remote, like an online Zoom release party where people have come together to read. And the first time we had one of these, we just expected everyone to read their poems. And the very first reader was like, "Nah, I'm reading my essay." and then it was glorious. And then the poet who was also there, who the essay was about, then, you know, got to hear, you know, like Sean Thomas Doherty read this essay about Carlina Dwan's poems. And then Carlina, when it was her turn, was like, "Now I'm going to read the poems that essay was about." And we got to hear these things come together. And so I think the poets themselves are delighted by what the prompt of the essay kind of elicits from them. And so they're really, I mean, they're as excited about the essays as they are about the poems. And that act of generosity towards another poet is something that they all take really serious. So it's really beautiful for us to read through them and to be able to feature them side by side.
Let's take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll pick up here. Today on Living Writers, Public School Poetry, issue number 3 is out in the world now. Check it out online. Public School Poetry. Today in the studio, Julie Babcock, Scott Beal, Ellen Stone, David Ward. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Jason behind the glass. We'll be back.
As around the sun, the earth knows she's revolving, and the rosebuds know to bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always. As now can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow, but in passing we'll grow older every day. Born is new, do know what I say is true, that I'll be loving you always.
Until the rainbow burns the star in the sky.
Always.
Until the ocean covers everyone's
heart.
Always. Until the dolphin
flies
everything that's seen.
Always.
Until the
moon
light becomes a dream.
Did you know that true love asks for nothing? Way we pay. Did you know that life is giving love a guarantee to last through forever in another day? Just as time knew to move on since the beginning, and the seasons know exactly when to change. Just as kindness knows no shame, know through all your joy and pain, that I'll be loving you always. Today I know I'm living, but tomorrow could make me the past, but that I mustn't fear. For I'll know deep in my mind the love of me I've left behind, 'cause I'll be loving you always.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Public School Poetry is here in the studio. Issue number 3 is live in the world. This is a wonderful, relatively new online poetry journal, poetry community that's being built. Once poets are part of this, I feel like they're along for the whole school bus ride. I don't see right. It feels like this is something people will then be part of a new community for forever, like, well, as long as you want to do this, no pressure, everyone. But you have, like you had mentioned, Scott, there's Zoom events, there's also public events where you're at community high school gathering in person for pizza, as well as poems and Zoom, and how important it is, like, to get the poets that are exchanging these gifts, and like the generous gift of thinking about each other's work together, and to actually see each other and to hear each other read. I just love that. Thanks for telling us about that, Scott, before the break. and Ellen Stone here, here with us, as is Julie Babcock, Scott Beale, and David Ward. Ellen, you've got one of the poems and essays from issue number 3. Do you want to kind of talk about the essay? Because Scott was saying the imagination people bring to the 5-paragraph constraint.
Well, this was one of the essays that blew us away because the essay is written similar to the form of the poems that were written. The poems were Monica Rico's Pantoum poems in the spring issue. Monica is an Ann Arbor poet who's from Saginaw, Michigan, and sent us only Pantoum poems. And then Amanda Moore, who is a California poet, wrote this beautiful essay, There Were Some Pantoums. And I'll read maybe the first paragraph or two. The Pantoum is the perfect poetic form for writing about memories and nostalgia. The ways lines return with new context is how memories distill, morph, change as time passes and subjects become distant. Like and unlike these poems, I never had a bikini. Boys told me my face was okay, but not my body. I never had short shorts or a boyfriend who couldn't spell. And I loved my fierce grandma who gave me manicures in the kitchen. These pantoums are not made of my life, but they powerfully unearth my memories and nostalgia as they reveal the speaker in glances and blows. And then at the beginning of the next paragraph, the way lines return with new contexts is how memories distill, morph, change as time passes and subjects become distant. So using the actual Pantoum form, that just blew us away.
And Ellen, did you want to read one of Monica's poems?
Sure. This is the one about short shorts. I Was All Legs and Lies by Monica Rico. I am sick of the girls in their cutoff shorts, just high enough to kiss a cheek, braless crop top and ponytail flip-flop, skin a candy crush, pure sugar. Just high enough to kiss a cheek, a song I remember for its shallowness, skin a candy crush, pure sugar. At 18, I owned one pair of shorts, a song I remember for its shallowness. I was all legs and lies. At 18, I owned one pair of shorts and a boyfriend who misspelled beautiful. I was all legs and lies. Unhem the cuff, defend me with a guitar, and a boyfriend who misspelled beautiful. I am sick of the girls in their cutoff shorts.
Thank you. It is so wonderful to hear then the interplay between those two. Like, you could hear it immediately.
It's really beautiful to have somebody listen to your work and engage with it in this pure way. And we've had lots of our contributors say, oh, I printed out that essay that somebody wrote about my poems, and it's like above my writing desk, or it's on my refrigerator, or like these, gift exchanges, as you put it, are like really special and very rare that you would get that kind of opportunity. And it's been really cool with the online launches that Scott mentioned to see past contributors coming to the readings. We feel like there is a community that's, solid and is going to continue.
And Ellen, you just read from issue 2 then, because it's the spring issue, right? Because the new one is fall, right? So you chose to read something from the spring issue.
Because of that, the essay, I think, just so beautifully connected with the kinds of poems that it talked about.
Yes, and I loved it. I'm so I'm wondering if, because on the website you say that Public School Poetry is publishing twice a year, so you've got the fall back to school issue and then you've got the spring break issue, right? Now, is the reasoning for that to make it something that is kind of manageable, so you don't have one of these like out, like, you know, summer or school's out for summer issue, you know. Yeah.
The cycle is a little bit longer because we do have to build in a month for our writers to produce the essay. So it's two issues a year, but it takes longer than you might think because we do have to build in room for the exchange.
Yeah, so we have to decide what poets are we accepting and then contact them and then give them a month to do the essay. Yeah.
And it's probably good that it's just a month so that it makes it a bit intense, but you can't not do it.
Won't forget in the interim. Yeah, we talked a lot about the time frame and yeah.
Too much time is probably not good.
No.
What are you all thinking for the vision? Like, what's next for public school poetry? The growth, I guess, keeping the community going through the Zoom events.
Well, we're thinking about going to AWP this year as one of our sort of growth opportunities slash a way of making, you know, engaging with the community. This is something that Meg could speak to if she was joining us, but yeah, brainstorming things like having an offsite reading, that kind of thing. We're also considering having a book fair section on our website where we won't be selling the books, but just, I don't know. I loved book fairs in school and just
yes.
wanting, yeah,
and
you did too.
Get some posters.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Get some cool erasers.
Tote bags.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, erasers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have pencils. Yeah, our only swag is pencils right now. We're going to try and get like two pieces of swag. Ellen just mentioned possibly a t-shirt that might get designed. We have a social media account now. We posted on it like 4 times.
So well, public school poetry on Instagram or?
Pub school poetry at pub school poetry on Twitter.
Okay.
One of our new X. Say Twitter because not X. Yeah.
One of our new contributors said that he saw the Instagram and I was thinking, wow, success.
Well, let's talk a little bit about issue number 3. Let's get to the latest release from Public School Poetry. So what were some of the decisions that went into choosing? Because now I'm imagining that with each successive call, you'll have more things to read, especially after you go after, good luck after AWP. Because the more, what you want people to find out about it, right? So the more that you have, how do you start choosing, do you think? And how did this issue kind of come together? Did you feel like some of the poems were talking to each other, the poets? Or do you think that they are so vastly different? Or was there an organizing principle? Or
we're definitely looking for diversity, not for things to talk to each other, and that the essays...
We'll do that part.
We'll do that part. Scott was about to say something, but I was just like, diversity is definitely a big, and diversity in like a really large encompassing way, just in terms of styles. We're all 5 different poets and with our own likes and dislikes, and having these conversations is really cool.
I was just gonna say it's all just about the poems themselves. We just read the poems and we have conversations about which ones speak to us the most and get us the most excited. And I think we're not trying actually to curate a blend of like homogeneous or like thematically interrelated work the way that some journals do. And it's a totally reasonable way to approach a journal.
But that's also being done.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been done, but it's also not very public school in its ethos, right? Like that whole kind of the theme. Which we lean into, you know, it is about democratizing the space and kind of letting the chaos of just, you know, whoever happens to live in the neighborhood now goes to the school or what, you know, the way public schools work. It's just kind of like whoever wanders in the door that is, you know, that speaks to us, that gets to have a place at the table. And we don't really try to control the interactions that'll happen. We just know they'll be exciting. And so far that's been borne out.
We are also vice principals, and so there's a very long staff meeting at the end where we take a long time to talk about why this poem that I love should be in there, and we listen to each other. So it's kind of a cool process. I'll go into the final meeting thinking this is the top 10, and then I'll come out of it and say, well, not really. Six of them or seven of them, because I listen and I realize, oh, yeah, you're right about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so, like, I feel so grateful for being able to do this with other people. And Ellen said we're VPs. We literally call ourselves vice principals instead of editors to kind of reconfigure this sense of power. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we feel like vice principals, you know, you don't have that much control over stuff. We like that. But having these conversations with people that I deeply respect as writers and as thinkers, it's such a joy.
Yeah. There's nothing more exhilarating than realizing that a poet that I love is loved by Scott or Julie or David. It's like, oh, they love that poet too. Like, it's a wonderful, it's a teacher feeling, actually.
And also getting to feel, to have your mind changed about something is just totally delightful. Just, there have been a number of times where there was a submission that wasn't on my radar at all. And then someone else was like, this was one of my top. And hearing someone else talk about it and open it up is in some way like a little micro burst of what I think is maybe happening for the poets themselves as they're exchanging work and writing essays.
Because when you anonymously match the poets together to write, it's not as if one poet is going to write about the other poet's poems and vice versa, because it's purposefully not
right.
a one-to-one exchange.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you receive, so the poets would receive a package of poems, and it's 4 to 6 poems that they would receive?
Usually three to four. Three is the minimum, yeah.
Okay. And then from that, they see what the poems say to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't have to talk about all of the poems. So if they want to just focus in on one, that's totally fine. If they want to, you know, go across the poems, that's great too. We say 5-paragraph essay. Really, you can be as lyric or narrative or argumentative as you want, as long as there's 5 parts and it's not too long.
Let's take a short break. When we'll be back, we will be back, I promise, with public school poetry. And maybe we'll hear some from issue number 3 when we come back, if that sounds good to the poets here at the table. Today with us, Julie Babcock, Scott Beal, Ellen Stone, David Ward. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back.
That's the way I planned it. Yes, I did, y'all. Look, I'm going.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, so glad you did, because you've got Living Writers. And today in the studio, we've got Julie Babcock, Scott Beal, Ellen Stone, David Ward, public school poetry. That's what's happening today, folks. So you're just in time. You're in the nick of time. And Scott, thanks for choosing the songs for today's program. Not only singing the intro song with your guitar, your own song that you wrote the lyrics, composed the whole thing. When's your next gig? When are you next doing your singer-songwriter hat self?
I appreciate the question. I'm playing at the Ipsy Ale House on November 9th, which is a Saturday coming up in a couple weeks, 7 to 9 p.m., if you want to come out and see me play. I'll play the public school poetry fight song, among other things. You know.
Yeah. And so folks already know one. They can sing along.
Absolutely. It's pretty easy to shout along with that chorus.
It's rousing. So Ellen, when we were in the break, you were also talking about the like Julie had mentioned earlier, diversity, right? And this, the diversity of publication, like who are the poets who are in public school poetry? So we have poets like, you know, Keith Taylor has come up already because he's a friend of the show. He was like foundational for Bear River for so long. Still. Can't imagine Ann Arbor poetry without, and neither, well, why should we actually? Hello, Keith, if you're out there. But along these lines, Ellen, Keith is someone who has like so many books of poems, right?
Right.
And who are the other folks that have been in issue one and two,
well,
and maybe three, too?
What I was super excited about is that, of course, I had to tell everyone I knew that this journal was ready for submission, and so I managed to tell some of the alumni of my my poetry club at community high school, and a couple of the poets sent in work, and they were chosen, and I was so excited. I felt like a mom. I was so excited because it wasn't just my vote; it was all of us. And the poems were good, and
they're great.
So that just made me so happy that you could have really very young poets at the beginning of their careers, and you can have poets at the end of their careers who widely published in the same issue talking to each other about the work.
Yeah. And the chance that any poet could be talking to any other poet about their poems in a form that's so reflective, mm-hmm. like the essay, like some kind of short essay.
And anonymizing the exchange makes, you know, it closes all that distance, right? No one knows
yes.
if the person they're responding to is someone who is like, you know, a young recent student or someone who has 20 books published, right? And so everybody takes everybody equally seriously as an artist.
As it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And is equally moved by the work, you know? Really seasoned poets writing essays about younger poets or kind of early career poets and giving it the same kind of generous attention and, taking it just as seriously as any other work in the issue. That's a really delightful thing to see.
And it reminds me of what David, you were saying earlier about how your mind, like you were surprised at how sometimes your mind changes, mm-hmm. like what you think would be the one is not necessarily like you see something differently. And I feel like that's the thing with so many poems, like sometimes you do need to slow down or you mm-hmm. need to see it again mm-hmm. or see, have someone else see something in it.
Yeah.
Then you're opened.
I think that a lot of writing about poetry begins from a place where you know why you're interested in a poet and like you have some initial sense about I want to write about the craft of this particular poet because I have this connection to them, which is awesome. That's great. But also there's something I think really special and unique about bringing that attention to across, as Scott said, across a kind of gap of taste or aesthetic or style and these kind of like natural divisions and having to sort of like actually bridge that in your thinking and writing is producing really cool stuff.
Because it's like sometimes we do get stuck in our own like mm-hmm. our own things that we like or the ways we think or operate mm-hmm. or what we gravitate towards for beauty even.
Yeah. Right. And I think so much of the exchanging or conversation about poetry is revision focused. I mean, how many poets, active poets, are like trying to work towards new drafts and talking through workshop work with people and trying to get feedback to for revision. But this is not that. This is not commentary with the goal of editing. This is commentary taking these poems as finished pieces that are fully existing in their own identity, their own selves, and trying to meet them where they are, which is not that common, I don't think, and which is very cool.
It's like in the academic, like, poetry space, so much is about improvement, like how, you know, and growth, and not enough about appreciation, right? And this creates a space just for appreciation of the work that's been done without a sense that it's not fully realized or that someone needs to develop in any way, right? And it just, it puts you in a very different kind of reading situation. Like, you have a different experience as a reader of the issues too, kind of getting to see the poems alongside this, these appreciations.
Yeah. It makes me think about my public school experience, actually, which is where I learned to, I fell in love with poetry. I had an amazing English teacher.
Do you want to give a shout out?
Yeah, Carol Goldsmith.
Hey, Carol.
Mrs. Goldsmith, you were amazing. Shout out to you. Anyways, she was very patient with me, and I brought her so many poems to take a look at. And, it wasn't really an issue of them being good or bad or in process, but, you know, she would write comments on them, and they were mostly just, you know, full of trying to understand what I was doing and offer some encouragement in those directions. And I think it wasn't a workshop space. It wasn't an essay writing space. It was just like, let me respond to these and encourage these poems. And not that our poets are like only trying to encourage one another. It's not just a, let's like sort of lavish praise together. It's a real, real.
That's a good point, David. Yeah. Cause it's not like that when you read these.
No, it's like a real curiosity about understanding what the poems are trying to do.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And sort of like also being vulnerable to show what it reveals to them, the person writing the essay as well.
Yeah. It's a really vulnerable space, and we totally understand that. And part of our public school tone when we're like talking to the contributors is like a really supportive one, because public school just as an entity is a scary place. Like, you get put with so many people in so many situations that you often don't have control over, and we want to kind of mimic that in some ways, but then also it's a safe our place is safe and supportive. And also vulnerable. So many of our poets, like when they turn in the essay, they're like, here it is. I hope I did it okay. Do I get a gold star?
Yeah.
Did I do it right? And, you know, just getting back to the, like, because we don't, they do beautiful things with it, and we don't have to edit them. And they're just really vulnerable, because like these things that they didn't have much control over, you know, what they were responding to are now out in the world. And these are published poets who now have essays out there, and they don't, they want to do it so well. And it's really wonderful. And we have school spirit guidelines. We only have 3 school spirit guidelines to keep everybody, you know, writing essays in the realm that we want. But other than that, just engage.
Because when it's something says on the website, lift each other up, not put each other in trash cans.
Correct.
Like, which is a good image from, like, I don't know. It wasn't in Dazed and Confused, but I feel like maybe middle school. So let's hear. Do you mind? Could we hear another poem or essay? What do you all, what did you bring today?
We all brought stuff.
Who would like to read?
But so Megan Levad is our other quote unquote vice principal, and she was hoping to call in today and be with us, but she can't. And she had a request for a poem that actually Ellen Stone had already printed out, thinking she wanted to read. So.
Yeah, I just want to read this because it was the first one I thought of, and it has a lot to do with the fact that it's about Pennsylvania and about next week. And I'm from Pennsylvania, so this is why I chose All My Poems Are Secretly Set in Erie by Laura Passon. I didn't know I loved the lake until I left the lake. I left the lake like the glacier left the ground. Glacier ground, an inland sea. Proof the hills were water once. Prove yourself in water, the sun slicking you with glory. Those 80 sunsets of oil slick glory. Pollution, the great cloud palette. Pollution clouds the palette. Swim in this, you can live through anything. Anything you can swim through, you can live through. I know, I loved that lake. I love Pennsylvania, and I actually love Lake Erie, and I didn't really know, but there's this beautiful park, Presque Isle State Park, that's off Erie that I just went to a couple years ago, and I was like, yes, my state, my Great Lake. Erie's had a lot of things said about it, but there are parts of Erie that are absolutely beautiful, and people are very proud of it.
And that was Laura Passon's poem.
Laura Passon's. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for reading that, and good luck, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Good luck for all of us.
Yeah.
Well, and what do you all think with that particular poem? Was that one that you, well, now I can't ask that. I was going to be like, was that on everybody's list? Laura might be like, oh, thanks a lot, Scott. If you're like, well, I had to be convinced. No. But I was really excited to see Laura Passon's poem there and Cody Walker's and for the other folks too, who I don't know of them yet. Dave.
I was just going to say that the reading process for this is so much fun and also so interesting and weird, and the kind of thing that you only experience, I think, if you're editing a journal where the seeing poems come in is really exciting, but also when you're sitting down to read, you know, a couple hundred poems at a time, there's a kind of like poetry blindness that sort of sets in. You stop being able to evaluate, do I like this? Do I not like this? It's hard to... Your own taste kind of gets numbed out a little bit or something like that, which is why it's really helpful to have four other people who can be like, yeah, no, actually this one is really special. And then you look again and you're like, oh yeah, all of a sudden I can like taste this and this is great. I really do like what's happening here.
It's also, you know, the fact that we, unlike a lot of journals, we take multiple poems per each poet, right? So that also changes the decision-making in the reading process. Sometimes there are people who submit where we love one poem or two poems, but we can't quite get there with three or four, you know? And so so sometimes we'll reach back out to those people and ask them to tell them we loved these things, please send something, some other stuff. And actually, I think one of the poems in this issue is a poet that the first time they submitted, we loved some of their work, but not enough of all of them to publish. And so they sent us another packet that we were then like, okay, yes, this is great. But yeah, it does change. And sometimes like some of us will love some poems by a poet more than others. And like together, we kind of have the community conversation about getting there together about the set of poems. And so that's also really exciting. So I don't know if like my favorite poems in this issue by any given poet are the same as everybody else's favorite poems by the same poets, but we all kind of have this mutual love of the groups of poems. And yeah, it's just a different process than I think of how it works for a lot of other journals.
It must be interesting too, because once you do decide all together, then these group of poems become like their own thing, like their own
class.
Little like class. Yeah,
yeah.
Thanks, Julie.
Or a club, maybe better than class in the poetry. Yeah, but, issue 3 club.
Yeah, another poetry club, yeah. Right? Well, okay. Let's take a short break, and then we'll come back. Ooh, and you know what? Ooh, we are getting shy on time, so we'll hear a little bit more when we come back today. Public school poetry. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. I'll introduce all of you.
My wounds.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. You've got Living Writers today. Public School Poetry is in the house. Issue number 3 is in the world, published this fall, 2024. Julie Babcock is here, Scott Beale, Ellen Stone, David Ward, and we've got Megan Lavad in absentia. One of our vice principals couldn't join us today, but we've got the other vice principals here at the table. We're getting short of time, folks. I've loved it today with all of you, and I feel like I love what you're doing. I don't know, it sounds kind of strange to say, but it's just true from the heart. Let's hear a couple more poems. Julie, do you mind starting us off? Is this from issue 3, too?
Absolutely. This is from issue 3. This is a short prose poem by the Chicago poet Christy Prahl, and it's called Ekphrastika. And I picked this one out also thinking about the upcoming election and some angers. So anyways, Ekphrastika on the paintings of Dory Why Not. A girl with hair on fire is every girl. Bring her flowers and watch her wick them to kindling. You're a fool to think hydrangea ever solved for overheating. Bring her antlers instead. Bring her your exposed clavicle. Bring her 3 doors to choose from. Hide a horse behind one, your darkest secret behind another. Something to hunt behind the last. Hope she chooses door number 3. You know her only medicine is to punch from the shoulder, and she would never do that to a horse.
To a horse.
So good.
I love that because I was surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Julie, you and I, this is unrelated. We're just talking about horses yesterday.
Yeah. I've got a horse calendar in my office. So,
which I was admiring.
I was like, this poem goes in.
Oh, no.
An automatic end for folks who've written horse poems. You get a clear bump, plus 2 points.
That's what I'm hearing right now. Yeah. Okay, yeah, all you writers out there. What about a donkey? How about a donkey? I've got some donkey
poems. We would love donkey poems.
Real, okay, yeah, they're coming your way then, Ellen. Okay. So, Scott, we've got a poem, too, from issue 3.
Yeah, this is a poem by Cecilia Smith. I really loved Cecilia Smith's work. One of the things I love about this is this is the kind of thing that's not supposed to work in contemporary poetry. Like, it's this poem that is in rhymed couplets with pithy kind of axiomatic statements. And it seems like it's the kind of thing that would be so gauche, you know, in a workshop, people would tell you you can't get away with this. And it works so beautifully and it's so great and surprising.
Oh, I love that. Where's she from too, Scott? Where's she?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
But check out the contributor bios on the website. Often they have childhood photos of people instead of their contemporary photos. So it's worth looking up the page anyway. So, this is You Know How It Ends by Cecilia Smith. If the floor is scratched, you move the rug. If sea level rise, you pull the plug. If water is stagnant, you shouldn't drink it. Who has a thought cannot unthink it. If you're out of food, you write a list. If you can sing like a siren, you don't need fists. If grease is on fire, you cover it up. If you're out of friends, a man's not enough. If the wind is calm, you won't sail far. If you speak loud enough, someone puts you in charge. If the taillight blinks, he wants to pass. You've been in his bed, but you still wear masks. If the bed is squeaky, you ratchet bolts. If the bed is quiet, there's marriage trouble. If you live by the sea, you always smell salt. Your parents messed up, but you're still your own fault. If you go to bed late, you sleep through the day. If home breaks like glass, it still won't decay. If pelicans fly, then so can their fish. If you're the genie, you don't get your own wish. If cheating's allowed, you bring out the aces. Your lovers are gone, but you still see their faces. If you've made it this far, you know how it ends. A birth, a death, a marriage. You pick.
Gotta say, I love that pelican part too. With a flying, their fishes will fly as well.
I feel like
the end too. Like, there's a lot of zingers in that. I was just really like, I hope that's okay to say about a poem.
A zinger dance poem.
Yeah, a zinger dense, yeah.
I feel like I heard...
Plus two.
Yeah.
I heard you gasp tea at the line, your parents messed up, but you're still your own fault. And I feel like I have quoted that line like so many times since I first read this poem. Like, it's been relevant in so many conversations. So good.
Are you saying that as a poet, as a human being, or as a dad? Maybe all three.
I shrug.
Well, all of you, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you, thank you, thank you for your vision for public school poetry and what you continue to do. Because you've got a mission and you're clearly living it. And thanks for, I also can't wait now for issue 4. So again, just to remind everyone, right, folks can
submit.
Mm-hmm. Head to the website. You can search public school poetry. It'll be the first thing that comes up. But otherwise, is it, does anyone know it off the top of their head?
This is publicschoolpoetry.com.
There we go. So easy as that, folks. So again, many thanks to public school poetry. Issue 3 is in the world. Julie Babcock, Scott Beale, Ellen Stone, David Ward, and Megan Levad, out further west there. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Jason for being behind the glass. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.
Thank you.
Monet and left foot. Sort of like a thong in an ass crack. Come on. Baby, whether I'm high
You're listening to WCBN FM, Ann Arbor, Michigan.